Right now, it's Sports Lit 101 as Bruce Pratt is here with us to talk about a book that, we've touched on a couple of times, but looking forward to hearing more about and looking forward to reading it, too.
Yes, this is a really, really good book, and it strides the line between pure history and contextual history and the evocation of an era. Now, a lot of people who are younger than me would have no idea how incredibly good the Baltimore Colts were in the 60s and early 70s. In an era that people think of Lombardi's Packers, whom the Colts owned in many ways at different times, and Halas's Bears. But this is a story about football coming of age, and it's a story about, in part, about a clash between the coach of the Colts after Webb Eubank, who was fired after winning a world championship and went to the Jets and won one against the Colts there, and Johnny Unitas. Now, the great thing about this book is it does not sanitize the human being Johnny Unitas, a serial womanizer, walked out on his family, was apparently not the greatest father on any level, but may have been the toughest football player of all time in so many ways. And I'm not trying to state it too strongly, but you know, they tried to take him out of a game once because he had a bloody nose. He just picked up some dirt, packed it in his nose, and said to the referee, "I don't see any blood now," and then drove his team on down the field. One of the money quarterbacks of all time. In an era where he called his own plays and scratched him up in the dirt. And he's playing for Don Shula, the young wunderkind who'd been an assistant in Detroit, who would go on in Miami to be the only coach to lead an undefeated NFL team through an entire season and a Super Bowl, and they just didn't get along. They didn't get along for a lot of reasons. There are some very colorful anecdotes about times they didn't get along. Johnny Unitas taking his daughter Jan to Mass. He was very devout Catholic on the surface, and so was Shula. And he says, "Hi, Shoes," when Shula goes by. His daughter says, "Who's that?" And he says, "He's a..." We'll just use butthole as the as a substitute word. And went through his life, just talked about if Shula was on fire, he wouldn't pee on him to put it out. But at the end of his relationship, said, you know, he was a good coach. I just didn't like him. Shula would say, "Johnny, you was one of the greatest, toughest quarterbacks of all time, but I couldn't say him because he wouldn't do it my way." Okay, that makes for interesting reading, and all the interviews in here, and this is a thoroughly researched book, are great, but it's the way the era is put into context politically, culturally, in terms of the rise of the NFL. Now, we talked about Ron McDowell's book last week and about how NFL players had to have off-season jobs and the like because they made so little money. This goes into that, but it also happens to go a little deeper into when the AFL gets established. And when Joe Namath gets his $400,000 four-year contract, which dwarfs anything anybody had seen.
Right. And by the time Shula came on board, I mean, Unitas was already the biggest star, one of the biggest stars in the game, having won championships, including what many still call the greatest game ever played against the Giants in 58.
In 58, and then they beat the Giants again in 59 by, I think it was 31-17. Yeah, so you have this... You have the situation, and Joe Namath is quoted in here throughout the book. He really looked up to Johnny Unitas, and especially interesting talking about when in 69, when the Colts lost to the Jets after all that ballyhoo with Namath saying, "I guarantee we'll win," and Lou Michaels taunting him and all that, that Namath said, "Yeah, we were up by what should have been an insurmountable lead," and then coming off the bench, old Gimpo Unitas, because he'd been hurt.
Right, Earl Morrill started.
And
right.
Earl Morrill, who had led them to, I think, 13-2 record, the Colts, came off and was playing okay. Not great, but okay. And then things went south in a hurry. And Joe Namath said, "You know, I knew we had an insurmountable lead, but I just cringe because here comes Johnny U. And if anybody can kill us, it's Johnny U." Now, Namath never gets back to the Super Bowl again, which people sometimes forget. Unitas does. And wins in 1971.
The 72 game, right, I think.
The 72 game, 71. But what this is a great study in is how football has changed. And you know, it's changed for the better in a lot of ways. There's some frightening stuff about Bill Curry and Vince Lombardi in here. Curry knowing Lombardi knowing Curry had a severe concussion, sent him back into a drill. some just terrible stuff about the abuse of players and the exploitation of players. But it's not a book that points a lot of fingers. It's a book that tries to find things out. And the writing is superb. Jack Gilden is an excellent writer, and he's got the chops. His works appeared in the Orioles magazine, the Baltimore Sun and Evening Sun, Baltimore Jewish Times. He teaches college writing. It's an erudite book. But what I really like about it is it's something I think I know something about, right? I've read Upton Bell's book, President of the Creation. I've read McDowell's book. I've read all these books about football at that period of time. But I think this one did a better job of showing what football teams can mean to a town. I mean, when Carol Rosenblum, who was at least a crook, if not one of the world's biggest gamblers, traded the Colts with Robert Irsay for the Rams and fleeced him, that began the decline of a very proud and beloved franchise. And it really shows you how a team can almost never do enough for where they are. And it's really a good book. I'm looking forward to talking to Gilden. I don't want to step too much on what he might talk about when we talk to him.
And you mentioned their ties to the community. I have a friend who grew up in Baltimore, and he's got great stories about watching the guys. He lived fairly close to Memorial Stadium, and watching guys like Art Donovan and Tom Maddie and John Mackey walking home after the games with their duffel bag.
Oh yeah, when I was in college, I went to college in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is not too far from Baltimore. It took us about an hour and a half to get to Memorial Stadium. I don't know if that was the speed limit or not, but we would go down to games, and it was built right in a neighborhood. And I can remember standing waiting to get a friend of mine caught a home run Yaz hit. One of the reporters said, "I can get that sign for you if you want." And I look around, and there go Orioles walking by us, on their way home to houses in the neighborhood. That was 1971, I think. It was in the early 70s. But yeah, and when they tore Memorial Stadium down, as they say, it was in a neighborhood, and the Colts really meant something, because what else did Baltimore have?
Right.
Didn't have anything else going for it at the time in terms of professional sports. It was a good franchise before that. But if no matter how much you may love the New England Patriots or Giants, whoever you root for up here, you got to really read about this era, because I was a Giants fan and I hated the Colts because they, they cost us two world championships, as we used to say when we felt we were part of the team. But it's a fascinating study, and Johnny Unitas is one of the more interesting figures in sports I know. So I'm looking forward to talking to Jack Gilden about this. It's called Gilden, G-L-D-E-N, Collision of Wills, University of Nebraska Press. Johnny Unitas, Don Shula, and the Rise of the Modern NFL. It's an interesting book.
Excellent. Thanks, Bruce. What's up next week?
Next week. Well, this is going to be controversial. And not that we're trying to do that, sports radio controversy. This is called Nailed to the Crossbar. Now, we've had Ron Smith on before. He wrote Wounded Lions. This is his follow-up. This book has 141 pages of text and 142 pages of notes and documentation. This is an exhaustive look at what the NCAA didn't do in their investigation, and some things that make what the NCAA did do
at
Penn State. It turns out that 13 years before any of this, Jerry Sandusky had been reported to law enforcement, and they did nothing about it. And so a lot of this story wasn't told. Ron will join us again, too, because he's always good when we have him on. He's been on with us twice before. I'm looking forward to finishing this book for next week, called Nailed to the Crossbar, From the NCAA Penn State Consent Decree to the Joe Paterno Family Lawsuit, by Ronald A. Smith, Professor Emeritus.
Sports Lit 101 every Wednesday here on Downtown.